Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand is out today. I'll be back tomorrow as well. Very excited to be here. You can follow me on Twitter for all kinds of real estate and money and business news at Glink on Twitter, thinklink.com for about, maybe a million pages of information on personal finance and money. ThinkLink Media is the name of my communication strategy and digital content agency. Happy to help you out there with all kinds of things and questions at thinklink.com, which is pretty much all you need to know about me. But we have somebody really exciting to talk to today. Terry Savage is back with us. I am so happy to have you, Terry, on this conversation. I can't even tell you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks, Elise. Between the two of us and our websites and our information and books and everything, we should just open it up to questions. The two of us ought to be able to do that without blinking, Glink.
I am thinking that you are exactly right. So let me do that. Hey, if you've got, this is an Ask Us Anything, AMA, from Terry and for me, any money, business, or real estate questions, call or text 312-981-7200 right now, and we'll be happy to give you the benefit of our many, many years of advice. And I don't know, Terry, if you add up all the pages in my books and all the pages in your books, are we over, like, maybe 10,000 pages of information? Probably.
It's a weird thing, though, of course, because people just are always online. So your site, terrysavage.com. You know, that's the nicest thing about personal finance now in this century, and that is ignorance is never an excuse. You don't have to go buy the book. The information is out there. It's free. There are trusted sources, people, like the two of us. We're not trying to sell you anything.
Right, which is so
anyway,
nice.
Here we are. What a way to end the year, though. My goodness, come on, stock market. I have a great statistic for you.
All right, let's hear it.
About the stock market. I think this is one encouraging one. I could give you one negative one if you want later.
Give us the good stuff.
This year is going to be flat. I mean, unless we're going to have some kind of incredible rally or a decline tomorrow. And going back to 1918, there are 11 times when there was a calendar year in which the S&P 500 was up or down by 3% or less.
Okay? Wow.
That's according to S&P.
Okay.
But in the subsequent calendar year, after a flat year, that's how we define flat, the market rose an average of 13.3% in those 11 years. And in fact, only 2 years subsequent to a flat year was the market down. And I can give you some of the most recent years. 2012, after a flat year, the market was up 13.4%, the S&P.
Wow, on the money.
And 1995, 34%. 1988, remember after 1987, which kind of evened out at the end, the market was up over 12%. In 1985, 26%. So I don't, you know, there's no guarantees of anything, but history says that when the market ends a year more or less flat, the next year ought to be a very positive one.
Well, that's
how about that for a nice way to think about the markets as we end the year?
I think that's very encouraging. And I think the most important thing that we can remind everybody is just stay invested, stay the course. The worst thing you can do is to either chase the hot returns, because you'll always be a year behind and way more than a dollar short. And the second thing is, because when the market comes back, you want to be fully invested in it, right?
Yeah. All the people in March of 2009, oh my goodness. You know, I'm just said that you and I obviously share the same attitude toward the market. I'm going to say this now because I just said about to send out my free year-end looking ahead letter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sign up for it at terrysavage.com, I'm going to send it out about 3 o'clock this afternoon. You will be on the mailing list. Sign up for in the yellow box, and then you'll receive an email that says, click here to confirm your subscription, so I can't put 1,000 people on the list. There are thousands of them. And you will get the newsletter, and you get a free copy of my first New Year's resolution for everybody is to get organized. And when you sign up, you get the link also to the personal financial organizer. You can fill it out online and save it. It's private, or you can print out as many copies as you want, give them to your friends and family.
Well, I think getting organized is a great first tip for everybody, because if you don't really know where your money is, if you don't know what you owe, if you don't know what the interest rate is on the credit card debt you're carrying, there is no way for you to pay down that debt, to reorganize your finances, start making positive steps. And really, it's just a step-by-step sort of thing, isn't it?
You know, people make money and personal finance out to be this big topic. Like, I grew up watching football. So I suppose if I hadn't grown up in a family that watched football every weekend, it would be very confusing to me. But I honestly believe that anybody could probably sit down and learn enough to know which is offense, which is defense, which guy gets the ball, the quarterback gets it from the center and then passes it or gives it to someone to run. What we're talking about is just that basic.
Right.
We don't need all those fancy plays that everybody's talking about. All the commentators make, huge fortunes giving you all that super inside information. I can never follow that. And I know the basics. And that's all you have to know.
All right. We have a couple of callers online. We're going to get to those in just a minute. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today and tomorrow. Delighted to have you here. Terry Savage is on with us as well. John is joining us. John has a personal finance question. Hey, John, what can we do for you today?
Hi, good afternoon, ladies. I have a question related to the deductibility of college tuition. I have four kids, two of which are in college, one on their way. And I'm trying to figure out, because of the limit, the income limit, is there any way to find deductions for college-related tuition expenses?
Terry, you want to take a crack at this?
I will take a crack at that. Did you, by the way, happen to do any savings in a 529 college savings plan?
I did. I did, and the problem was that I based my plan on my kids going to a state school, and they're all gifted academically, and they're all going to very expensive private schools now.
Yuck. I mean, great. It's just going to cost you a little bit of money. Terry?
I'm just about to post a column, actually, next week on scholarships, and so I'm going to send you, by the way, just before I answer that, to scholarships.com. And see if there's any free money available, and you want to do that right away in January. And those of you who have high school students, you'll read the column. You want to start when the kids are, freshman, sophomore year, because a lot of great scholarships depend on your high school activities. Let me give you, and I took the second while I was doing all that to give you the specifics. The tax benefit is if you have income, modified adjusted gross income, of $160,000 or less on a joint return, or $80,000 if single, you can reduce your income by up to $4,000. Now, you got to look and check on your own situation, but there's not a big deduction, even if you have a bunch of kids, but you have tuition and fees for enrollment are considered qualified expenses for that deduction. But again, with four kids in college, that's like a drop in the bucket. And I want to just ask, they wanted to go to these very expensive schools. Did you ever think of saying, I can't afford it? Do you know what the burden's going to be for you on student loans?
No, I mean, luckily, I mean, for the most part, one of my kids is 80% scholarship. My other is about 70% scholarship.
Oh, good.
So, I mean, but my out-of-pocket expenses still average around $30,000 to $40,000 a year for what's not covered in the with their scholarships. So I was just trying to figure out, less taking a second mortgage out and deducting the insurance expense, the interest expense, whether or not there were any options that I was missing.
Let me jump in and just say there are a couple of things. I think you're better off actually getting a student loan where repayment, and even depending on which kind of student loans you get, the repayment will be deferred until after they graduate. And at that point in time, you can see what kind of jobs they're going to be getting and whether that will cover itself. So, for example, if your kids are tech-oriented or math-oriented, they may get out of school and start earning close to six figures. And so repaying those loans, while they're going to be steep, wouldn't be much of a personal inconvenience for them, let's say, as compared to you. So that's one thing to look at. And then the other thing is, now that home prices have been rising and home values have been rising, home equity loans are getting all kinds of play again. And it may be possible for you to take out a home equity loan or line of credit at an extremely favorable rate. Of course, you can only do this if you've got enough equity in the property. But I would certainly consider that as being something that might help you down the line, at least to float those expenses now if you don't want to do the loan thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The only loan I wouldn't get, because I made that mistake my freshman year was the parent assist loan that the government provides.
Plus loan. Because that,
plus.
The plus loan is too expensive.
Yeah, they are.
They're way expensive, and it's and they hit you day one. I mean, you're paying that thing immediately. So as soon as I took that loan, and then I realized what I was doing, I turned around and paid it off right away. So, I appreciate the information.
Let me give you one website so you can actually go online and create a spreadsheet and compare all the alternatives. Very helpful. It's FinAid, FINAID, like financial aid, FinAid.org. And you will be able to create a spreadsheet there, look at all the possible sources of additional. Don't forget, just because they got those scholarships, there may be other grants, there may be other work-study programs. So look at all opportunities, and I'll let Elise move on to the next person.
Thanks, Terry. John,
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
All right. Bye-bye.
So, Terry, those are all great suggestions, and I know that you've got probably more things for people at your website, terrysavage.com. You've got this newsletter. You're sending things out this afternoon. What else have you got on your website?
Well, I have a lot of calculators. You have the archives of my column, and Elise, I noticed you started following me on Twitter, and I will follow you. I'm at Terry Talks Money is my Twitter handle, and I think that just staying alert to all these kinds of opportunities is really the resolution you should make for the new year.
I think so, that's a good one as well. Hey,
again,
thank you so much.
Anybody who wants to sign up, I don't sell anything on my website. I just give away my information. Well, I write a newsletter when I get in the mood, and always around the holidays. I'm going to send it out later today. So if you go to terrysavage.com, sign up in the yellow box, and then click on the email to confirm, you'll get all the details of the year-end stock market information.
All right, Elise, sounds good. Thanks for being with us, and you and I are going to go have lunch soon.
Lunch, absolutely.
All right, have a great weekend and Happy New Year. All right, it is 12:27. We're going to take a short break. I'll be right back with more of the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stay tuned to WGN Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink. Filling in for Steve Bertrand today. So glad to have you on board. I have in the studio with me now Scott Kleinberg. He is the columnist, social media expert, and editor for the Chicago Tribune, but the So Social columnist. I haven't seen your column. Where's it running?
Well, actually, it's funny that you should mention that. It runs online, and right now we're trying to find a good place for it in the paper, but online every Wednesday.
All right. That sounds awesome. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hashtags.
Yes.
Big, great, cool thing. Tell us about hashtags. What happened in 2015 that evolved the whole? This wasn't even a thing 5 years ago. I think it's so funny.
I know. And every year, people really, really look forward to these. But these are the top 10 hashtags of the year, according to Twitter. So they are taking all of this data from all over the world, and they're putting it together. And it's interesting how the number – well, let's start with number five. Number five is Love Wins, which talking about, you know, same-sex marriage and all of that being such a huge topic.
That was so great when that actually broke.
Oh,
and you saw
amazing.
Love Wins everywhere, and everybody kind of went on their Facebook page, and they put up the rainbow, and it was just very moving.
It was a wonderful thing to see. And actually, I really thought it would finish higher than five, but you know, ended up being
five.
It
was a big year. It was a big year for social media.
It really was. And then – the next three going up, 4, 3, and 2, all had to do with what happened in Paris, what happened with terrorism. So number four is Pray for Paris. Number three is ISIS. And number two is the Quran. And it was interesting because everybody started looking up, you know, details about the Quran after we had all of this stuff happen. And the conversation that just went back and forth was just so amazing to watch unfold on social media.
You know, Twitter is a really interesting tool for journalists. And it's become this just a way that I think everybody watches where news is. Now, my kids who are millennials and they're young millennials, they all go to Reddit. They use Twitter for new breaking news. I think Twitter must be breaking older. But
breaking older.
But
yeah.
And Breaking Bad. But but my kids go to Reddit and they read sort of the news feed. But so much of that just kind of confirms what you're seeing on Twitter. As you've watched that evolve over the years, Scott, what strikes your mind about how Twitter is sort of evolving that conversation and the speed with which news breaks.
Well, I think that is a huge thing. The speed at which it breaks is amazing because Facebook is always trying to get into that real-time conversation. They've launched hashtags. They're doing everything they can to compete with Twitter. But when it comes to breaking news, you know, Reddit, you're right, people do go there. But when it comes to breaking news, everybody goes to Twitter first. You see breaking news topics on your Facebook feed a day or two after everybody's talking about them on Twitter because it takes that long for it to bubble up at that point. But when it comes to Twitter, I mean, like I was saying before, everybody looks forward to these year-end hashtags more, and they weren't around 5 years ago, you're right. But now everybody is just, you know, oh, what's it going to be this year? And just I just wanted to mention, because we didn't get to that point, the number one hashtag is still domestic. It's jobs. It still shows that everybody is more concerned about the economy and about the state of our finances. You know, it doesn't mean that people aren't concerned about the other things, but it's so fascinating how that just appeared as number one and then everything else going down from there.
It's the economy, stupid. Well, we're going into a presidential election cycle.
Yes, so you have to be concerned for
sure. You have to be concerned about it. What is that? When people search for things, like they use the hashtag jobs and they're searching for things, to me, jobs are so many different things.
Right.
You're looking for a job. They're looking for postings on jobs, but it also could be economic news that they're looking for, career information, advice. How do you sort through as you're going through and thinking about these hashtags? How do you make best use of it for anybody out there?
It's a difficult thing to do. When it comes to something like jobs, you end up seeing that with a lot of other hashtags. So like you're saying, you know, people looking for jobs, it's like, you know, hashtag jobs, hashtag unemployment, or hashtag jobs and hashtag something else. So you kind of use those things. You go through where there's more than one and you kind of look at to get the idea what people are talking about. A lot of people use hashtags because they want to be in the conversation and don't want to miss out.
Right.
So even something that is more about, you know, Wall Street or something that's more about unemployment than jobs, people are going to append that hashtag because they don't want to miss out. So it's really difficult to sort through sometimes. You have to look at one hashtag and you have to think about the topic at hand and you have to say, okay, what other hashtags might apply? And then you search and you try to find it from there.
So I have to tell you this story. We were on a trip and my nieces were all using Instagram, right?
Okay.
And so I'm using Instagram and I have like 26 followers on Instagram. Like, okay, if you want to follow me, I'm Elise Glink, please. It'll increase my numbers dramatically. Just one person follows me on Instagram.
I'll follow you today. You'll be 27.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yep. Anyway, so I'm doing this and I'm putting into the actual copy as I'm writing about my different shots, what it is, and I'm using hashtags. And my nieces, who are 13, are like, oh, Aunt Elise, that is so annoying. Like, you are so annoying when you do that. That is just so uncool. I would just skip your Instagram account. So,
wow.
I know, pretty harsh, right?
That, like, really is harsh, yeah.
But it's interesting. So then I ask my kids, who are a little bit older. My kids are 18 and almost 21. And they're like, well, it's hard, Mom, with, you know, hashtags in the middle of your conversations, because it makes me think about hashtagging more than it makes me think about what you're doing. We would prefer you to do the hashtags at the end. And I'm just wondering, hashtag etiquette. So as we're starting a new year, give us some guidance.
Well, I'll start by telling you that normally on Instagram, you want more hashtags. More hashtags on Twitter are frowned upon. On Instagram, it's usually better. I use hashtags at the end unless I'm writing it into what I'm doing. So if there's actually something where it makes sense to put it in rather than putting it at the end, if I say the weather in Chicago today is snowy, I'm going to put the weather in hashtag Chicago versus writing Chicago once and then writing it a second time at the end with the hashtag.
Right,
so
that's
at
what
that
I
point,
do.
I'm okay.
Okay.
I think most people, I think, are okay with it being like that. I think it becomes weird when you start to really look like you're trying to add hashtags. And there comes a point where it's like okay,
so cool,
wait a minute.
Or, you know.
Yeah, there comes a point where it looks a little purposeful.
Yeah, well, you know, we're trying to do what we can to get people to. So it's
absolutely
funny. So I put up this picture from our vacation and I'm, you know, like hashtag travel, hashtag whatever it was.
Right.
My nieces were just, they're laughing at me. I'm getting like 6 likes, right? From people I mostly don't know with names that I can't actually say on the air because they're so filthy.
Right.
Who are obviously just, you know, scams things. And then I look at their pictures. It's almost the same identical picture, 97 likes. I'm like, how did you get 97 likes in 4 seconds?
And usually it's all about how many followers you have. And I'm not one to usually say that it's all about how many followers you have. But on Instagram, popularity definitely matters.
It does matter. And it's interesting. A friend of mine has developed a huge following on Instagram. Her name is Ruth Epstein, and she was written up in the Tribune as one of the top five accounts to follow. She goes around the city and she takes beautiful shots of buildings. She's a film editor, and she just has an amazing eye.
That's great.
And I actually don't think she hashtags anything. I don't even think she uses her real name. I've probably outed you now, Ruth. I'm sorry about that. but it's really, really impressive what she's been able to do on that. In Twitter, where I'm more familiar and I play and I have more than 27 followers, there I find that hashtags are really helpful for searching for things. And when I go to conferences and they have a hashtag for it, it's really amazing to be able to see that live conversation.
Yeah, those are important. And more businesses, conferences, more and more people now realize that having something to drive that conversation, a place where you can collect everything in one place and then come back to it later and say, hey, look at the hashtag that we started and we put up 5 hours ago, and don't miss the recap of all the stuff that we have. That's where it's super, super helpful.
Yeah, it is really helpful. So I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to ask you for what you think is going to happen in 2016. If you actually can, you know, look out a little bit and just give us a quick 1 minute on social media in 2016.
Social media in 2016, two things. Snapchat will continue to grow. Snapchat is huge. Young people love it. Even people who are not so young are starting to love it. I love it, and I never thought I would. And live video, live streaming.
Like Moments on Twitter.
Well, Moments, yes, kind of like that, but that's curated moments. That's curated tweets and stuff. I'm talking about like Periscope. And Meerkat. Mm-hmm. And live video is just starting. That's what Facebook calls it, live video. It's just starting to roll out to personal accounts, business accounts last week, personal accounts now. Mm-hmm. Live video is not a new thing on social media, but apps that really organize it and make it so it's accessible to everyone, that's what's new. And people are going to start going crazy for that stuff.
You know, I'm wondering how it will affect things like the Black Lives Matter movement and things that are we're already seeing people videotape everything. I'm amazed at what is coming out. Now, if it's live, can you imagine if you're actually holding up a camera and you're watching, you know, somebody get shot, God forbid?
And stuff like that, I mean, scary to think about. Stuff like that probably will happen.
But it could happen in the middle of a war zone. It could happen in the middle of a shopping mall. There's some real issues, I think, that will have to be up for discussion. And certainly the law is so many decades behind at this point.
That's for sure.
Personal things, privacy issues. There's just a lot of stuff that's going to come to the fore, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
All right. Well, it's been great to have you on the air, Scott.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And what do you think the top hashtag will be for next year? Jobs?
You know,
or will it be presidential election?
I think it's going to have something to do with the presidential election. I really think it's pretty safe to say that is going to be, if not the top, number two.
All right. Scott Kleinberg, the So Social, hashtag So Social columnist.
Yes, thank you.
Follow you on Twitter, Scott Kleinberg.
Yep, that's correct.
All right. You're going to follow me on Instagram. So now I have 27 followers.
I will definitely do that. I already followed you on Twitter, so I'm all set there too.
I know. So we're all great.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you too.
Hey, this is Elise Glenk. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, filling in for Steve Bertrand today and tomorrow. So glad you could join me here. You can follow me on Twitter, as we've talked about, at Glenk. And of course, Instagram. Let's see if I can get 28 followers, thanks to Scott Kleinberg. I'll have 27. ThinkLink.com, ThinkLinkMedia.com. And if you didn't get your question answered today, questions@ThinkLink.com. I've got some questions for my good friend Jonathan Smoke, who joins me right now. He's the chief economist for Realtor.com. Jonathan, so nice to have you on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
It's great to be with you this afternoon.
It is so nice to hear your voice. So, a lot of real estate news. I saw that President Obama signed the deal that's going to allow anybody who goes into foreclosure or short sale who has, what would normally have been treated as income by the IRS, that's going to be forgiven. That thing has been extended through the years. We got through TRID. That looked okay, but now home sales are down. What the heck's going on in real estate this year?
Well, it's been an interesting year, to say the least. Generally all good. We're going to end this year with the best year that we've had since 2007 or 2006, depending on where you live and which particular metric you're paying attention to. But it's been a year of fits and starts. We started off the year pretty weak because of the the really rough winter pretty much that most of the country experienced. And so it was a slow start to the spring, but then the spring and early summer were incredibly strong. Then when you got into the late summer, we ran into some softness, some weakness in sales that were principally related to the stock market declines. And so as a result, you really saw some softening relative to the early summer in August and September. And then now, most recently, we've seen data that suggests that sales are at the weakest year-over-year growth period in October and November. Partially, I believe, some of that seasonality, some of it is related to that TRID.
Yeah, the TRID law that went into play, right.
There's no question that there's been a disruption to closings in November following the implementation of that in October. And so we'll catch up on those sales, not too worrisome there. But, you know, we are at a point of inflection with mortgage rates going up. And some parts of the country have seen such significant price increases that you really have a mixed pattern when it comes to individual markets and neighborhoods around the country for next year. Some markets are not likely to see a sales increase.
How about Chicago? Others. Because that's where we are. What do you think?
Well, Chicago is perfectly kind of in that mixed bag picture. Chicago is really 2 to 3 years behind the country overall, and compared to the places that have been, you know, making all the hot news stories this year in real estate, like in California and Denver, yeah. Colorado,
or
Texas.
Portland, up 10.9% year over year. I saw somewhere.
Yeah,
prices?
Chicago hasn't been seeing that.
No.
You know, Chicago's appreciation this year looks like it'll probably end around 3% up, which, it's positive. That's good. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're just now reaching a point in Chicago that the foreclosure hangover has really been worked off this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that, ironically, is the reason, one of the key reasons we expect sales to actually be down a little bit in 2016. So if you think about it, the U.S. market overall actually had a decline in sales back in 2014, and it was essentially because we came off the period where you had an abnormally large number of investors buying distressed properties that were coming out of foreclosure, and it's just that Chicago had that year in 2015 rather than 2013. So price fundamentals are actually showing a lot of strength, and inventory for the first time in many years in most of the major counties in Chicago are now recording year-over-year declines. So I believe what's happening there is you're entering a period that much of the country was in 2 to 3 years ago, where home values are now just now starting to appreciate more. But because you're still seeing the average homeowner that bought at the peak still 25% or so off of the value that they had when they purchased.
A lot of underwater people in Chicago. It's still the case.
Right. That limits the inventory on the existing side, and unfortunately on the new home side,
right.
We're barely off the level of starts that we had 2 or 3 years ago, which is well off of the peak of activity back in 2005, 2006.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for the update. I'm sorry we don't have better news. I'm hoping that the presidential election cycle will allow us to kind of catch up here in Chicago and then move ahead as we go from 2016 into 2017. Jonathan Smoke is chief economist of Realtor.com. Jonathan, thank you.
Thanks, Elise.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. I'm Elise Glink. It has been a gas, as always, filling in for Steve Bertrand today. You can follow me on @Glink or ThinkLink Media. I'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned to WGN Radio.